Welcome on into our Treasure Chest Thursday. It is October the 10th. We are inside the Game Bar and Grill inside the Treasure Chest Casino. Mike Dottiglie, Steve Geller, also Luke Augusta hanging out with us, and of course in studio, Charlie Long, getting you ready for Thursday Night Football coming up on WWL at 7 p.m., a battle between the surprising Seattle Seahawks and also, I guess you could say, the surprising San Francisco 49ers, NFC West bout this evening.
You know what that tell you? All this next man up. That don't apply in the sports world.
They got to retire that saying, I feel like.
What? I retired it long ago.
I know you always say that.
To me.
It depends on who the next man is.
Yeah, the next man ain't nearly as good. Okay? You can't tell me the next cat is as good as Christian McCaffrey or George Kittle or, you know, look all the guys think they got hurt. Come on. That don't apply. That's great in the locker room. That's rah-rah, tis boom-basta. But that don't apply in the real world. And I'm talking about in sports world, also in, other professions too. You can say that, but it's not reality. Thing with Seattle, they come and go on how Geno Smith plays.
Yeah, surprising how he's been.
Because Geno, man, you talk about, and I've said this before about Derek Carr, having watched him at Fresno State and with the Raiders and with the Saints, he's the roller coaster quarterback. It up and down, up and down. Geno Smith's the exact same way. Exact same way.
Got the highs and the
lows.
Man,
you're going to catch some really nice highs, and you're going to catch some really low lows. That's just the way it is.
It's amazing, too. You look at, obviously, all the praise that Brock Purdy was initially getting, and he's had a rough second half of games lately.
Yeah. Well, again, he figured out next man up don't work either.
Right. I need those guys. It's a little bit different in the backfield and the receiving core.
Yeah, because you pay so much attention. If you a defensive coordinator, you pay so much attention to Christian McCaffrey and what he creates beyond just being a running back. They'll put him out in motion, then he becomes another receiver. They'll put him in the slot. He catches the ball. His ability to turn up. Now, that's nothing against Mason, who I think's a good back, but he's a good back in that system.
Yeah.
And how they have it set up. But he ain't McCaffrey. Okay, because you don't see the residuals of what he does for everybody else. It's the same thing, Kittle's down, and they got, defensive players. I think they have four defensive starters that's not playing. It's no excuse, but
right,
it is reality.
No, nobody cares.
What? Here's a quarter. Call someone who cares, that old country western song. Ain't nobody cares about the injuries you got. You play with what you got. That's just part of college football. Professional football, there's no moral victories. Okay, that's all great and fine for high school,
Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah,
right.
And even your son don't believe that moral victory
no,
stuff. Because he want to win. But for some, we played them close. We played a good team. It's close. Take that. Man, what? I want to win.
All that counts, right? Like in the win column, what's it saying? And in the loss column, and hopefully, you're going to come out ahead more than not.
Yeah. But again, W's and L do count.
It does
make a difference on that thing. But, man, the Saints injury list
right, talking about injuries,
pretty
good segue. Looking at things today, the initial injury report came out yesterday, but it was an estimation because it was just a walkthrough. Today the Saints did go through a full practice and not practicing, though, for the black and gold. Still Taysom Hill, Cesar Ruiz, Derek Carr, not surprising there, dealing with the oblique injury. As we know, Spencer Rattler's been named the starter for Sunday. Also, Lucas Patrick, Will Harris, and Pete Werner did not practice. Limited, Peyton Turner, Alvin Kamara, Rashid Shaheed upgraded from a do-not-practice to limited today. And then good news, Willie Gay with his hand issue went from limited, now a full go today. And also Kendra Miller back-to-back. And I think also last Friday he had was a full go practice. So three straight practices of Kendra Miller being a full go practice, dealing with that hamstring issue as he works his way back. Boy, oh boy, we haven't heard a peep about him since training camp, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. I'd say he needs to step up, but he ain't even done that. Okay.
Any step's a positive for him right now.
Anything, because you need him now. You don't want to wear, and you keep using Alvin Kamara the way they're using him. Man, he ain't going to last 17 games in this league. He's just not. So you hoping that Kendra Miller can step in and become a solid number two guy. It's obvious that they're not giving the football to Jamal as a runner. Do
maybe
they really
two touches
trust
a game.
Him? with three touches? You know, come on. Do they trust him at this point that he can be a solid back? That's why you spend a third-round pick on a guy. He ain't hit a lick other than maybe that last game last year against the Falcons.
Yeah.
Bobby always tell me about that. Okay, what happened to other games? You know, you got to count them too.
It seemed like it was a positive building block. I got obviously ending last season, and okay, let's see what this goes. You know, carries it over into his sophomore season, but we just haven't seen that surge yet.
Because if you watched him, and the few times we've been able to see him, say in the OTA session, can't say about training camp because he didn't miss
right.
basically two of them. But man, he's got some talent. He's got some ability. Now it's can you stay healthy and can you be consistent with your performance? And, you know, Deuce said it best in the offseason about this is a growth for him, not only physically getting his body ready for 17 games, but also the mental part of the game. You got to know what you're doing. I'm not putting you in there if you do it just 50% of the time. No, you got to know what you're doing all the time out on the field. It's part of this game. Because we get it a lot with Tommy. Oh, football is football. I played junior high school football or high school. What? Junior high and high school? Come on, you can't compare that to professional football. They play with the same sort of ball, but that's about it. But they got people that actually believe that.
With the injury report too, Mike, obviously back-to-back days, still not seeing Taysom Hill. That kind of hurts this squad because you feel like he means so much to this offense.
Yeah, Taysom's not playing in this game. The other thing that jumps out at me, Lucas Patrick and Cesar Ruiz.
Still that big patchwork offensive line going on.
So you got a new one again Sunday.
And we know Shane Lemieux was put on injured reserve.
Yeah. Well, that didn't surprise me. We talked about that in the offseason. And Deuce laughed when I said it. Man, I know.
He's good for a couple snaps in that match.
He's going to play a little while, and he's going to get hurt. It's consistent. I can't tell you why, having done this over almost 40 years now, that certain players, once the injury bug starts to hit them, it's almost like hitting over one domino to strike another. It's not that Shane Lemieux can't play. It's he can't stay healthy.
Can't stay on the
field. So, you know, the best, you know, ability is availability. With him, he's just not available.
Looking with Alvin Kamara, nice to see him upgraded to limited from a do not practice. I thought it was curious yesterday I mentioned this, was dealing with a hip and rib issue, and now it's listed as a hip and hand injury for Alvin. So don't know when that occurred last game, obviously in that matchup with the Kansas City Chiefs, but apparently dinged up his hand there. Hopefully it's nothing too serious when it affects his ability to carry the football.
Man, the one thing you can't say, man, he's a tough guy. Man, Alvin Kamara's a tough dude out there. And, you know, they've given him the two full buckets of water to carry as a runner and a receiver. Now, I think a lot of people were kind of down on Olave because what it was, four targets and a couple catches against Kansas City. But look who he was going up against.
Exactly, McDuffie. Right.
Trent does that to a lot of people. Trent McDuffie's one of the best cover cornerbacks in the NFL. And the one thing you can say about the Bucs, if they got a weakness, it's that corner. I want to go back to the injury report. What happened with Antoine Winfield? What is he listed as today?
Limited today with that foot issue.
Oh, see, that ain't good because more likely Antoine Winfield's going to play. It makes a difference. And I guarantee you that the Falcons would not have got into range for a field goal if Antoine Winfield was on that field. Last Thursday.
Right.
And Antoine Winfield, he's one of the best defensive backs and certainly one of the best safeties in the National Football League. And, man, he patrols that middle. He gets his hand on a lot of would-be receptions, either to knock it down or pick it off.
We're at the Treasure Chest Casino here till 7 o'clock. That's when Thursday Night Football comes on. Come on and make a bet at the FanDuel Sportsbook right next to us here at the Bar and Grill. Also, we've got plenty of action on the floor and plenty of food here, having a delicious pulled pork sandwich. Mike's got
the shrimp po' boy. Man, it's really good.
Luke's got some wings, so we got a whole smorgasbord of goodness here. We're going to come back with more sports talk after the break. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. Sound off on the Oak and Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Be right back after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are live from the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill as we get ready for Thursday Night Football this evening. We'll be in Seattle against San Francisco. You can hear that, obviously, WWLAMFM.com and, of course, the Odyssey app. Or stop by the Treasure Chest, place a bet on the game, hang out with us at the game bar and grill with the television screens all around us. Do some gambling, get some grub. Plenty to do at the Treasure Chest. Plenty of parking, too, makes it so nice and
easy. Oh, man, it's awesome. It's much better than before when you have to take the little bus. Man, I come here before.
See, I missed those days.
What?
I wasn't around.
Oh, yeah, you take the bus, you go to the little stop, they catch you in the bus, and then they bring you to the casino, and then they bring you back.
Coming up on our show after the next break, we're going to be talking to the Buccaneers, Locked On Buccaneers host, and James Yarko talking about this matchup coming up against the 3-2 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Obviously, huge matchup. The Saints have dropped their last three. They are 1-1 in divisional play, and you don't want to fall too behind the rest of the pack right now. And you got Atlanta and Tampa Bay at 3-2. So a critical matchup against the Bucs. Want to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Mike. Hanging on with us right now, Carol in La Place wants to sound off. What you got for us today, Carol?
Hey, you guys, Steve and Mike. Listen, I know Mike's gotten a lot of accolades, but I want to give Steve an accolade, man. I really enjoy listening to you, Steve. You seem very knowledgeable.
I appreciate you, Carol. You are now instantly the best caller of the day.
Put you on top of the list. He put you on top of the list. No, Steve deserves it. No, I'll be honest with you. I agree with you.
Well, anyway, I was wanting to talk about the offensive line again. We've known since training camp and when training camp ended that we needed offensive linemen. 31 other teams cut offensive linemen, and we didn't pick up a one of them. I mean, come on. There had to be one or two of those guys that were pretty good that we could have signed, and we didn't. Who's responsible for this?
That falls on the lap of the head coach. Okay, that's Dennis Allen's baby there. Because he controls that 53. He works with Mickey Loomis on who he wants on the team, who they can get in, that sort of thing contractually. But that really falls into the lap of Dennis Allen, okay? Because he's got to push this. And my beef has always been when you're going to run that type offense, you need extra running backs, extra linemen. I agree with you totally on that. But if you're asking who this balls down to, it comes down to Dennis Allen, the head coach.
Yeah, I feel like they dressed it, obviously, in the draft with Taliese Fuaga. But other than that, no real –
you needed more than that.
Right, no real pursuit in free agency. When you knew a guy like James Hurst wasn't going to be back in the mix, you were letting Andres Pete out the door as well. There was no attempt to re-sign him. So, you know, the depth at that position, not just even who was going to be starting, the depth was a concern for the season as well.
Yeah, you picked up Connor McGovern last week.
He was going on a plane.
And all of a sudden, hey, kid, get in there. I say kid, he's 31 years old. Get in there, big vet, and play. He ended up playing a ton of plays. And so I agree with you. And also, too, they had hooked their caboose, so to speak, to Nick Saldivari at guard. Man, he got beat like a drum against the Chiefs.
He got yanked pretty quick.
Oh, my goodness. They pulled him quick, and they put Lucas Patrick at left guard, and Connor came in and was playing center. So, again, that didn't work out for him. But really, in that sort of deal, when you look at that roster, that really boils down to the head coach.
Thank you to our most knowledgeable and expert caller that we have, Carol.
Steve said you can call back anytime after 6 o'clock.
We're going to go back into that Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. And, of course, we got Jimmy on the line. What you got today, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. Look, I'm calling in about the Spencer Rattler phenomenon, not since Elvis Presley has the fan base been so excited. I feel like this is the second coming of Elvis here. And I know we got to keep this in perspective here. And I'm not throwing Hayner out. I know a lot of fans are like, you know, but you know, with Rattler having that experience at Oklahoma and having the experience last year with a porous offensive line, Mike, you've said it before that South Carolina had a really, similar offensive line, you know, considering to the Saints being on the run. Of course, the results weren't there, but, you know, the experience. And I'm not surprised that with this offensive line, Carr took on an injury early on in the season. And when he gets back, it could have happened again, of course. But to have three, and I said this in the summertime to you guys, I said we need three active quarterbacks because the chances are all three might play with this offensive line. I just, for the people who want Haener, I know he had one more year of experience. When you consider, again, that he played at Fresno State and Washington, I don't think that was the level of speed that Rattler saw at Oklahoma and South Carolina coming at him. Again, I think, like you see with Jaden Daniels, having played quarterback in the SEC, the speed, the ability to transfer from playing in the SEC to the NFL has been easier because he saw speed in the SEC. And I just, listen, I'm excited. There is going to be a learning curve. We all have to realize that, whether it's Haener or Rattler. But I do think that there's potential here that Rattler could be the long-term solution. I just want to listen, for all, and for me included here, for the people who do want Haener, Mike, break it down to us real quick, what Haener's career was like in college. And, you know, like, kind of give us, because a lot of us saw Spencer Rattler play at Oklahoma on big, you know, on the big stations, you know, as a casual college football fan. But tell us a little bit more about Haener, because all we've really seen of him is in the preseason. Tell us a little bit more about his background.
Yeah, he's not the biggest guy in the world. Bobby always says we could sneak him into a high school game, and nobody would kind of challenge that. He was really good, short, intermediate, very accurate passer. He was not considered a runner, but neither was Spencer. People have labeled him a runner. He didn't run all around. Now, he has mobility east and west, better than Haener, but he wasn't considered a runner. Now, he was running for his life last year because of South Carolina's offensive line, which was so bad. But Jake was a really good, short, intermediate, kind of eat you up and kind of beat you with 1,000 cuts. I'm just telling you, Jimmy, when you watch him throw a ball, and we didn't go to the summer training camp, but in watching the OTAs and the organized practice sessions and everything else, the ball just came out different. And he can spin it. And Spencer's not the biggest guy in the world either, but boy, is he got a rifle on him, and he can put a ball in tight spaces. One of the things he's going to have to be a little careful with, not say a little, he's going to have to be careful with, is not trying to put a ball somewhere like you maybe could in college, because you're going to get it picked off in the NFL. But you can tell he's a much more grounded young man than he was, say, at Oklahoma, or even coming out of high school. And, that, man, that series they did on him didn't do him any good. You know, come
it
on,
just
you,
thinks that's a lasting yeah, impression yeah, you have 16, as a 17-year-old
right. kid. You're going to do dumb things and say dumb things. Not everybody's perfect in this world. But, man, he is really something, spinning the rock. You can tell the big difference for me, I think he is, Spencer is, a little bit better improvisational on the move, where Haener is more of a step up in the pocket type guy. And secondly, arm talent.
Definitely stands out. Man, you just know it's like that ball was thrown by Spencer.
No, Bobby and I watched him the first time when he was throwing the football. If we looked at one another, whoa.
Right.
He got some arm talent. Not, you know, I saw him at Oklahoma, saw him at South Carolina. But to see him on a field,
right.
Yeah, you get a field, man, he can spin the rock now. Now, it's up to him, make the right decisions, throw it downfield.
We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino at the Game Bar and Grill. I want you to stop by here till 7 o'clock. Going to take a break. When we get back, talking some Tampa Bay Buccaneers with James Yarko of the Locked On Bucs podcast. So stay tuned right here on WWO. Be back right after this break. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are here, Treasure Chest Thursday, inside the Game Bar and Grill. Happy to welcome in now James Yarko, Locked On Bucs podcast host. James, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys?
James, you made out okay with everything storm-wise?
Yeah, I'm actually not located in that area, so I am completely safe. But a lot of my, you know, obviously my friends, my colleagues, a lot of people were in the path, and it seems like everybody came out, you know, safe and you know, have some damage to deal with, but everybody seems to be okay. So yeah, a scary situation down there for sure. But it looks like, you know, things aren't quite as bad as maybe they thought.
Well, God bless y'all in that area, because it's been a constant the last couple of weeks. My first question would be about Antoine Winfield. because I think that Buccaneer defense is totally different with him and without him. Now, he's been limited in practice, but if he plays, he's a difference maker out on that field for the Bucs.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and I've been saying it all week. You know, the return of Antoine Winfield Jr. and then potentially looks like the return of Kalijah Kancey at the same time. It changes everything that Todd Bowles can do with this defense. You know, Antoine Winfield Jr. is the everything guy for the defense. He can play in man. He can play in zone. He can play in the box against the run. He can blitz. He does everything at an elite level. But then if you also have Kalijah Kancey there, Logan Hall has come on strong the last couple weeks. He has as many sacks in the last two games as he had in his career up to that point. So he's becoming a legitimate threat. And if you add Kalijah Kancey, you have three legitimate pass rush threats across the defensive line now against an injured and less than 100% Saints offensive line, which obviously plays right into Todd Bowles' hands. But, yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Antoine Winfield Jr. opens up everything for what Todd Bowles is able to do with that defense because he's able to utilize Antoine in so many different ways.
He's a special player out on the field. And he works out in the offseason with a friend of mine. So I told him, I said, Antoine, here's the worst part of things. I scouted your dad when he came out of Ohio State. He just laughed. He said, well, since you've been doing this for a while, I guess, huh? Because his dad played 14 seasons in the NFL. But, boy, is he a chip off the old block. I mean, from an intelligence standpoint, his ability to put himself in a position to make a play, and also to communicate with other people on the field where they should be. He knows what to do, and he gets everybody else to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's that back-end leader, right? It's almost shades of the late 90s, early 2000s Buccaneers, where you had Sapp up front, Brooks in the middle, and John Lynch on the back end. Well, now you have Vita up front. You have Levante in the middle. You have Antoine in the back. And those guys really orchestrate everything. They are the coaches on the field. They're the leaders. They're the ones making sure everybody knows what's going on. Everybody's in the right position. And you know, it's a big loss when you don't have that guy on the back end of your defense for 4 weeks. You know, and he got hurt on the next to last play in week one. So it was an absolutely brutal loss. And I will say Jordan Whitehead has been fantastic for the Bucs this year. Antoine was really excited that he came back. He's played really well. And then Christian Isian in Antoine's absence has played well. It may not seem like that all the time because of games like Thursday where Kirk Cousins goes for over 500, but that wasn't entirely on the secondary. But yeah, it's such a huge boost in terms of what Bowles can do, and then just the level of talent and the leadership that you get out on the field with Antoine Winfield Jr. It's really going to, energize that entire defense.
One of the things that's happened over the past couple of weeks with the Saints teams have been able to run the football on them. We saw Kareem Hunt. Okay, 2.5 weeks ago, he was sitting at the house waiting for a phone call to come in. He rushed for over 100 yards. You guys got kind of a dual backfield here. We know a lot about Rashad White, but then Bucky Irving. I saw him play so much at Oregon. He had a costly fumble last week, but, man, he is quick as a hiccup, and that initial step up the field is fast. That is something the Bucs, I think, are trying to help Baker a little bit here in not putting it all on him. That ability to run the football, the Saints have been susceptible. We saw the Eagles do it. We saw Kansas City do it. They were able to run the football against this football team.
Yeah, and Bucky's opportunities have grown week by week because of what he's been able to do on the football field. And you're right. You know, he's a one cut and then two steps and he's at full speed kind of guy. He has incredible vision, especially for a rookie running back. And he's able to hit much smaller running lanes than Rashad is. And I don't know if it's the quickness, if it's the vision, but he seems to be able to kind of work his way through heavy traffic at the line and then pop out on the other side and take a 1 or 2 yard gain and turn it into 5 or 6. Now, you know, even though the Saints have been susceptible to the run, you know, the Bucs have had some offensive line issues. Luke Getteke still has not cleared concussion protocol. He suffered a concussion in week one. And now rookie center Graham Barton, 2 days in a row, he did not participate in practice with a hamstring injury. You know, he now looks to be in danger of missing this game. Robert Hainsey, of course, would step in and start at center, and he has plenty of starting experience. But Graham Barton is a different animal. And, you know, although he's had a couple of rookie mistakes here and there, he is an absolute monster in the middle of that line. So that's going to play into whether or not the Bucs can open up some running lanes, and it's going to play into the protection for Baker Mayfield. When this offensive line is healthy, they're a pretty impressive unit. They're much better than what we saw from the Buccaneers last year. But if you're missing your starting center, your first-round draft pick, you're missing your starting right tackle, things can get a little shaky.
Well, look, don't feel like you the lone guy in the crowd. The Saints got issues, too, all across the offensive line. Your thoughts on Baker Mayfield? Not a lot of people would have thought once he signed with the Bucs, he would have this sort of run. And you see the maturing factor in Baker.
For sure.
And, man, his ability, he's so accurate. He moves around a little bit east and west. And every once in a while he'll take off running with the football. But it's his coordination with Mike Evans that is so impressive, and that they've been able to hook up on a lot of big plays. Your thoughts on the growth mentally and physically, so to speak, and playing into what's best for him in Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, Baker has been just an absolute breath of fresh air in Tampa. And, of course, you go from Tom Brady, and anybody that steps in for Brady isn't going to live up to Brady because he's the greatest to ever do it. But Baker coming in and not letting that kind of overshadow what he's able to do, he wasn't trying to be Tom. He was just going to come in and be Baker, and he played really well last year. And then you bring in Liam Cohen, who he already had some familiarity with, and they've been able to start to build a rapport. And now all of a sudden, this is an offense that can put up 30 points in any given game. They can go toe-to-toe with the best in the league if it comes to a shootout. And you know, top 10 in passing yards, top 3 in touchdowns and passer rating and completion percentage. Yeah, he's on another level right now, and it seems like he and Liam Cohen kind of get a little bit better every week. So I don't even think we've reached the peak of what Baker is going to be able to accomplish on this team and with Liam Cohen as his offensive coordinator. Yeah, he and Mike obviously built a great rapport last year. Godwin is now getting far more involved than he was last year, and things are just really clicking for this offense, and it's because Baker he's one of the best in the NFL at pre-snap reads, and he's putting the offense in the best position to get a positive play. You're right. I mean, he really has matured. He's a lot of fun, you know, in the locker room, on the field, everything. He's a fun guy to be around, and these players just gravitated towards him as a leader and someone that they really enjoy playing football with.
James, looking at the tight end, Cade Otton for this group, the Saints have had a lot of issues with keeping the tight end corralled. Dallas Goedert, Travis Kelce, although I guess a lot of people could say that with Kelce. What can we expect out of a guy like Cade Otton in this matchup against the Saints D?
Probably similar to what you've seen the last couple of weeks as he started to get more involved in the offense. He's going to have a small handful of targets, a couple of catches, probably be a target on third down one or two times throughout the game, move the chains, keep the drive going. But it's really been Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. You know, Godwin just came out of the gates and exploded. He's been the third down machine, you know, to move the sticks. Evans is scoring touchdowns and getting his big plays. So I'm not sure how much Otten will be utilized. You're probably looking at 6-7 targets and then, you know, 4 or 5 receptions for, you know, 30 to 40 yards and a couple of first downs. I don't think he's going to be a major part of the game plan, especially if Jalen McMillan is able to come back and the Bucs really get their wide receiver 3 back. And then you also have Sterling Shepard, who has stepped up the last couple of games, played great against Philadelphia after Trey Palmer went out with a concussion, scores a touchdown against Atlanta. He had a great game there. So, you know, Otten will be utilized, but not heavily.
James, definitely appreciate the time and glad it all is well by you, and hope you enjoy game day.
Thank you, James.
All right. I appreciate James, you guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, brother.
James Yarko, the Locked on Bucks podcast. You can check out more of his work there if you want to get some more inside info on those Tampa Bay Bucks getting ready for that noon kickoff Sunday on WWL and, of course, the Odyssey app. We're going to take a break and close out the 4 o'clock hour right after this at the Treasure Chest Casino right here on WWL. Stay tuned. Welcome back here to the Treasure Chest Casino, a special edition of Sports Talk every Thursday. Me and Mike Dettillier here hanging out with you until 7 o'clock. That's when Thursday Night Football takes over, and we'll be placing our bets on tonight's game between the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. I don't know. I'm definitely feeling an under in this matchup. That's for sure.
Yeah, it might be the bet to go, Steve. But a lot of people told me they bet, man, they want the 49ers to win. I had a few people come walk over. They 49ers all the way.
Yeah,
in this game. We'll see.
We'll see what happens in the matchup. Obviously, they've been struggling with a bunch of injuries. I think everybody has right now. It's just so strange to see this hit around the NFL.
I'll be honest. In all my years doing this, it's the most injuries I've ever seen this early in the season.
Back with more Sports Talk right after news. Well, welcome on in, folks. It is Thursday, October the 10th. We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino, landing at the Game Bar and Grill, getting ready for Thursday Night Football coming up 7 p.m. You can hear that on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app, or stop by the Treasure Chest, place a bet at the FanDuel Sportsbook, and watch the game here on all the television sets they have here at the Bar and Grill and all around the casino. Honestly, a huge full floor area with any game you can imagine possible. Of course, the latest and greatest technology with the slot machines. It looks like more like video games to me now, Mike, than the old-time one-armed bandits.
Yeah, man, it's all spread out well, and all the restaurants that they have here, not only the game, but they also have a little sandwich shop and steakhouse,
yeah,
right alongside of
it. I told wife you're ready. One night I got to come in here, take her on a date night, and check out the steakhouse. That's for, you know,
come
getting
on,
dressed up fancy and a night out with the wife.
Come on, you got to woof some of them cobwebs out that wallet, dude. You got to take the old lady somewhere. Come
definitely got to take her out. She deserves it for sure. looking at the weekend, we got a busy one. Obviously, Saints are taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. And then another rivalry game. We got Ole Miss versus LSU coming up.
That's
Saturday.
That's huge, man.
6:30 Saturday night in Death Valley. And you know it's going to be a raucous atmosphere after the bye week for the Bayou Bengals. Definitely looking forward to seeing this matchup. And I guess it doesn't get talked about much, I feel like, the mention of being at the Magnolia Bowl.
Man, that's at one time, like my dad grew up in that world. Man, hated Ole Miss. and they got some people that still like that. But, you know, Alabama has sort of taken over as that being a rival. And I'll be honest with you. When they used to play every year, Florida,
right?
That was a big rivalry game. And God bless him. He passed away many years ago. But Joe LaBruzza, who lived out in my neck of the woods and was terrific running back at LSU, says the first time he experienced it in a game, he went to Gainesville. And all of a sudden, he had his helmet on, and he could hear that ping, ping, ping. And, he, you know, the coaches came up to him and said, don't take your helmets off, man. They throw in, like, pennies and dimes. So, you know,
wow.
Joe, just to make a joke, said, yeah, I left out of that with about $1.75 worth of change. you'd have to hear him, but God bless him. He passed away many years ago. But it was funny. But, man, the rivalry there, LSU, Florida. But LSU, Ole Miss, and, boy, in the late 50s and into the 60s, that really, really was a huge rivalry. And then late 60s, Archie, twice, kind of cut LSU off.
Yeah.
One time from being an undefeated team, and the other time, you know, they were, I think, a two-loss team. But they caught him the final year. they beat him pretty good the final year. Archie had the broken arm. He had the cast on and played that game. And they actually moved it. Because it was almost like a playoff game before the playoffs actually had ever started, and they moved it to a Saturday night. Man, Tommy Casanova, I remember that. He was wild that game. But, yeah, it's a huge game. And
you ever talk to Archie about that game? Did they try to get him not to play in that with that broken?
No, Archie's deal is I was playing.
There's no way, huh?
He said, I was playing. he said, no question about it. And a lot of people were trying to get him not to play. thinking about his long-term future in the NFL. He's like, Mike, the broken arm was the least of my worries once I got in the NFL. Hey, man, Archie got beat up pretty good playing with the Saints. So, yeah, he talks about that a lot. And, boy, his sophomore year really shocked everybody when they ended up beating LSU.
Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. We got James on the line. You can sound off as well. 504-260-1870. Want to hear from you. What you got for us today, James?
Hey, guys. To help the rookies, I guess, and not just the rookie, but the staff prepare better. You know, Devin White was released again. I don't know what's going on in his head over there, but the Raiders just checked him out. I mean, I haven't heard that they signed him yet or nothing, but he would be an immense asset in helping the staff understand some of these zone blitzes, what to look for. And not only that, but, you know, previous games, I don't know why, I don't know what they had against him per se, but when he played us, he was the best linebacker to guard AK. This guy that they got now at linebacker doesn't have the speed, but they like him. Of Devin, but they like him much better. And the second thing, and maybe more importantly than anything, is Sean owned Ty Bowles. And, you know, I mean, look no further than, what was it, 2 weeks ago when they came in there and they beat him with the rookie quarterback. Like, we got our rookie, and Sean handpicked his rookie, and I think he had 60 yards passing or something like that. But he traditionally beats Ty Bowles, and I would hope that our staff would look at the tape and see what Sean did to basically neutralize Ty with his own blitzes. I heard, you know, the guy bragging about the safety, Winfield. Yeah, he's a great safety and everything. But they've never had a real pass rush this season, per se, when you look at what they were ranked. But Ty schemes up with these zone blitzes. I don't care if you're a veteran quarterback. He's real good with that. And the thing that what I most appreciate about the way he schemes things is that he doesn't – I mean, he could come up with something like a day or two before the game, you know. But anyways, just picking up Devin right now, I think would be an immense help because, you know, it's not like they could change a whole lot. What are your thoughts on picking up Devin and actually looking at the tape of Sean, not just this past week, but previous seasons on how he's able to neutralize Ty Bowles' defense guarding us, you know, our Saints offense per se.
In watching that game, man, what Vance Joseph did to kind of play football chess against the Buccaneers. I mean, he outflanked them. And, man, he really confused the Buccaneers on the offensive side, the football. You know, I think sometimes that's sort of overblown what a player can give you that you don't already know. Todd's been in this league a long time. So you've seen a lot of what he can give you from a defensive standpoint. And he's all about giving you a look that doesn't look to be pressure. And then he comes with pressure. He is a lot of times in talking to veteran defensive coordinators, when they play a rookie, their deal be sugar rush. Let's play coverage. I want to see if he can make the throw. With Todd Bowles, he's been a little different. In essence, I think he wants to affect the throw. He wants to take out the launch pad of a quarterback, and especially a young one. And he comes from different areas. So what you might see initially when you come to the line of scrimmage, he changes up real quickly. And a lot of it, he tries to get right up the middle. Because you know why? If I had Vita Vey beating up, that center guard, man, I know I got a hole there I can run through. And Vita Vey is a key player for them, and he was hurt early in the season, and now he's back. I know one thing. I saw Kirk Cousins. Man, he was getting out of that fast. because he knew that, you know, he didn't want that big 350-pound man pouncing on him. So it is a cat-and-mouse game with Bowles does, but if you watch in the past, no matter where he's been, it's been about pressure, not necessarily coming from the outside, but looks to get pressure inside, the quickest run to the quarterback.
Yeah, you mentioned with Vita Vea, it's no surprise that he's back in the mix for them. In the last 2 weeks, the Bucs defense has racked up 10 sacks in 2 games.
What? Every time he's in the game. Okay, one dude ain't going to block him.
Right.
Okay, and he comes with a little hotter motor than Chris Jones. Because Chris, when he wants to play, you better get out the way. And we saw it in certain times against the Saints.
Right.
When Chris Jones cranked up that volume button, it was bad news. Vita Vea comes to play. Now, there is some wear down to Vea, okay, because of his size. But I don't think, Steve, what you brought up is a very good point. If when you have to block him and it takes multiple guys, that frees up a lot of one-on-one blocking for the other defensive linemen. And also, he blows up the middle so you can shoot a linebacker or a safety right up that A-gap and you right to the quarterback.
We could sure use that on the Saints D-line, that's for sure.
A dude like him? all 31 like, other teams.
It just seems like nobody's coming free right now on that line unless you're getting some help.
Yeah, and that's one of the things with Vea. He doesn't mind being the guy to blow everything up, but
right.
You take care of the business. You finish him off.
Clean it up, yeah.
Yeah.
We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino every Thursday, as a matter of fact, folks, and we're getting ready for Thursday night football between the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. That's a 7 o'clock kickoff. I'll be here at the big screens all around the casino. Also, you can hear it on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. We're going to do a little preview of Ole Miss versus LSU. We're going to be talking to Jordy Collada, host of the Jordy Collada Show, when we get back after the break. So stay tuned right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Back here talking about the big game this Saturday, talking about LSU taking on Ole Miss coming to Death Valley. Happy to welcome in Jordy Collada, host of the Jordy Collada Show, now joining us to help break down this matchup. Jordy, how you been doing heading into this game?
Steve, Mike, great to be back. Thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Jordy, man, with all the injuries, and everybody got them one place or another, but you hate to get them in one spot. LSU has them in this game at wide receiver. Here's my thing. If Shelton Sampson can do anything, now's his opportunity. And when they let him do it the first time, man, he got underneath Brian Kelly's skin a little bit, and we read his lips real well. Hey, you want to play this game or what? And he let Sampson know it. With the injury to Kyle Parker and C.J. Daniels and Hilton, this would be the perfect spot for Sampson to showcase his skills.
I said the same thing this morning, Mike. We had a 10-minute segment on Sampson, on Shelton Sampson, and talking about the opportunity that he has in front of him. And, you know, we have been blessed at LSU, whether you're a fan or covering the program, to see it's an incredible line of wide receivers. I mean, that date back to even – you know, the 80s with guys like Wendell Davis and through Todd Kinchin and Eddie Kinnison to, you know, all these guys that have come through here from Dwayne Bowe to Jamar Chase and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and Odell and everybody in between. This team has options, Mike, and Sampson is a guy who came in very highly regarded, 5-star prospect at Catholic High and was really one of those prospects that no matter the game, no matter the opponent, you could kind of throw it up to him and he could change it. You know, that usually translates to the SEC. And like you said, you know, Brian Kelly and the coaching staff has needed to see more. And this is a great chance. That injury report was very highlighted to that wide receiver room. Like we said, they've got options, but Shelton Sampson seems like the likely candidate to really take a step forward this weekend in a big game, Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night.
I think, Jordy, one of the things is, I know in doing the pregame show with Herb Tyler, just a few weeks back, we could see the way Aaron Anderson was playing with much more confidence than he did a year ago. He's always been a playmaker, watching him at Edna Carr, his quickness, his ability to take that first step and get up the field. And, you know, he'll go over the middle if you ask him to. In my opinion, I think he's made the biggest jump from any returnee player from LSU on offense than anyone else on that football team from what we saw a year ago.
I agree. I think he's emerged as the number one guy. I mean, really, this team has been looking for somebody consistently that Nussmeier can look to, kind of bail himself out of trouble and trust and put the ball up. Lacy has shown over the last couple of games that, you know, he still has some of those drop issues, and, you know, that may, you know, hinder Nussmeier in big spots. And I think Anderson has been the most consistent. I think, like you said, he's taken the biggest leap. You know, Brian Kelly really talked about him doing his things, you know, really off the field, kind of going into helping him on the field, and him taking those strides. There was a big expectation for Aaron Anderson in this offseason and going into this year to be somebody who stepped up. And, you know, I mean, he's been there since fall camp. I mean, he's looked fantastic. And, you know, covering him at Carr, you know, one of the things that we always talk about with him is 20 special teams touchdowns at Edna Carr in high school. I mean, in Louisiana 5A football, if you're scoring a rate of those types of touchdowns and explosive plays, that translates to the SEC. And, you know, you're starting to see it. He's a big playmaker. And, you know, obviously that quote that Saban gave him after the game got a lot of run last year. But, you know, you could even see from the other side, Alabama and Saban kind of wishing they still had him, telling him that he would be a big contributor on last year's team for the Tide. So, you know, it's great to see Aaron Anderson. I'm happy for him. And, you know, I think he's really kind of just getting revved up. I think he's got a lot more plays left in the tank.
Look at the running back position. Maybe give us a little update with Caden Durham with the toe injury. But, Jordy, I just look at it this way. This offense has run much better in the running game. And also, I don't know if they've had a receiver catch the ball as clean as Caden Durham since Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, Clyde could do it, man. He was really good catching the ball coming out of the backfield. But I think post-Clyde, they've not had somebody that could catch the ball nearly as well as Durham. And this team offensively runs better with him. So give us a little bit on the health status and your thoughts on the development of Caden Durham.
Well, it's going to be interesting because he was on that injury report. And, you know, if you go back and watch that injury, Mike, I mean, that is a wicked-looking injury for a running back. It's on his second touchdown against Southern Alabama, and Miles Frazier just kind of collapses dead weight onto his leg. And, you know, he's lucky to me that it's just a toe injury. I mean, he came back into that game, which was good to see, to kind of relieve the stress of it being a knee. But, you know, it didn't look good. And hopefully he can be ready to play because, like you alluded to, the team just runs more efficiently with him in the game. I mean, you know, some of these things in the run game that were setting them back early in the season, I think came to patience and knowing how to cut back and knowing how to set these blocks up. And Durham has really shown that he's a cutback guy. He's got really good vision. And then once he puts the gas down, once he slams on the accelerator, I mean, he's gone. You know, I mean, you forget it. And, you know, to echo what you said, I think he's such a threat in the pass game as well that, you know, he's created so many problems for defensive coordinators. I mean, you know, guys that you think you got to go in there and kind of play a one-track mind against Durham. I mean, you've seen him on some sets where, I mean, they've had him lined up in the slot. They've had him lined up out wide. They've run him out of the backfield. I mean, they trust him in the pass game and his hands, and you know, it's kind of been fun to watch because he's an explosive player, Mike. I mean, he's, you know, like we saw it 2 weeks ago, but, you know, I think the plays he made against South Carolina has been the most impressive thing that I've seen all season with Durham. I mean, he showed toughness, speed, physicality. He showed vision. He showed the full package, and future's bright with Durham. And, you know, it's a Frank Wilson special, man. I mean, you got to get – He's got a stable of guys back there, or he did to start the season. And, you know, one weekend you think you got John Emery. The next weekend you think you got Josh Williams. The next thing you think you got Caleb Jackson. And then here comes Caden Durham. I mean, that's kind of just how Frank Wilson operates.
Looking at that run game, obviously going to be so important in this matchup, I think, against Ole Miss. Can LSU, this Tiger team, do enough on Saturday to keep that Ole Miss offense off the field, you know, winding down the clock more, just, you know, bleeding more time just to keep that offense away, just because how deadly the Rebels can be.
Well, I think that's the plan, right? You know what I mean? I think that's kind of the – when you look at the offset of the season and what they were going into, that's the way they wanted to play, and you know, specifically in games like this. I don't like the matchup, you know, being honest. I think that the matchup is not well-suited for LSU. When you look at the way that Kentucky beat, you know, Ole Miss, I'm not sure if LSU can play that style, especially for four quarters. So, you know, I mean, it's going to be anxious to see how they play them, if they can keep them off the field, because, you know, I mean, that as much as Brian Kelly has said it, you know, he does not want to get into a track meet with Ole Miss. I mean, you know, he showed that last season, but I'm not sure if they've made enough improvement on the defense to play the style that really can punch this offense in the mouth. Now, one thing that's going for LSU is that they're beat up. I mean, Ole Miss is beat up. They lost a center. They've lost some offensive linemen. They've lost some guys in some key spots. And whether or not Trey Harris is going to play is going to be a big, you know, be a big storyline here. So, you know, you catch Ole Miss at the right time, but still on paper, I think this thing still favors Ole Miss as far as the matchup goes.
One of the things I've seen different from Ole Miss in the early games and in the last two has been Jackson Dart getting a little bit greedy, wanting to hit the big play, because he was able to do that against teams they were much better against. Then all of a sudden now, Kentucky, South Carolina, especially in watching the Kentucky game, Jordy, he had throws underneath, the guy's wide open, and he's trying to hit the deep ball downfield. Now, that's a little bit of an extension of lane. Okay, I'm not going to blame it all on Jackson, but I think that you see a little bit of a difference in his play of him wanting to hit that big chunk play when he's got an open guy 8, 9, 10 yards downfield, and he doesn't even look at him. He sort of overlooks him. I mean, I'm throwing it deep. It caught him against Kentucky. Didn't have as much, say, play against South Carolina, but I think it's something for LSU you're going to have to be cognizant of how you get after him. One thing he can do well, he can take off and run. And we saw it a year ago. And he gives that dimension to this team. But over the last couple of weeks, I've seen that in him a lot more than early on, when I think it was easy to hit the big pass because of who they were playing. Kentucky and South Carolina, he was passing up that short stuff. Man, I want to hit the 35-yard play downfield. I mean, you're not always going to get that.
No, I agree, and, you know, I'm with you. I think that a lot is lended to Lane and the way that he coaches Dart up and, you know, what he really wants from that position. But, yeah, you know, I think that's what LSU will need this Saturday night, something like that. I think they're going to need a greedy play from Jackson Dart in a turnover. They're going to need to take away a possession or two from Ole Miss if they can, because, you know, I mean, just like we've talked about with Ole Miss offense and what they can do with the football. So, you know, I think that, you know, Dart playing that style, look, I think he's feeling himself, Mike. I think he read a lot when people were talking about the first month of the season that he was, you know, in the Heisman discussion, and he was, you know, one of these players that everybody was talking about. And, you know, I think as a veteran guy and some of the stuff that, you know, he got in the off season. I mean, his NIL package, if you kind of dig into it, it is wild. I mean, he's got full access to a private jet. I mean, it's an incredible deal. So, you know, I think that comes with a little bit of pressure when things start to tighten up a little bit. And, you know, Dart, I think, is kind of showing that. So, LSU needs that Saturday night. They need, you know, kind of a big turnover, a big spot that, you know, they can take an offensive possession away from Kiffin, Dart, and the Rebels.
Jordy, definitely appreciate the time. Hope you have a good one and enjoy Saturday, obviously.
Thank you, Jordy.
All right, boys. Thank you.
That was host of the Jordy Culotta Show. Jordy Culotta, you can check him out there. Also on YouTube, or the show is streamed. That was the correct term to say that.
Yeah, it is.
I'm caught up on stuff. You know, I'm trying to get better with terminology nowadays with all these different services, too. It's unbelievable. It's like, wait a minute. It's Thursday night football. What do I need tonight to watch this football game?
Steve, you got to get you a better TV provider.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you got the TV provider, but then I need a subscription to so many different services now.
Okay, you learn how to use that Fire Stick. Listen, I learned it, so you can learn it. Come on.
Yeah, I definitely need to get your Fire Stick, I guess.
Yeah.
Taking a break. We're going to come back with more. We'll get into our Pick 6 segment. Boy, it was a rough one all around for us last week. We'll be looking to rebound with our picks coming for this weekend. We'll get to that right after the break here on WWL, taking a break at the Treasure Chest Casino. Be right back. Back here on Sports Talk, we are inside the Treasure Chest Casino at the Game Bar and Grill, getting ready for Thursday Night Football to kick off. Also, plenty of MLB postseason action going on in here as well. Got plenty of TV screens, every kind of sport on right now. I'm seeing football, baseball, tennis, basketball. You want it, they got it here in the Treasure Chest Casino, the Game Bar and Grill. Make sure you stop by.
Man, it's like at my house.
Charlie, time to get into our Pick 6 segment, and I know it was not a pretty week for anybody making selections.
Oh, boy. Not pretty is an understatement. This is a big old, as Mike and I will do, boo, boo, we stunk it up, guys. I mean, this is the first time maybe ever in Pick 6 history, and this is on me. I mean, Mizzou, South Carolina, Tampa Bay, I mean, Buffalo, the Steelers, the Saints. And look, there was some bad luck in there. I mean, the Bucs should have beaten the Falcons. The Falcons should be 0-5, but that's another story for another day. The Bills had their chances against the Texans. Missouri just got blown out of the water. So there were some bad picks in there, too. A goose egg for yours truly, 0-6 for me. I was flying high after that 5-1 week. But then I looked at everyone else's picks. Mike, you went 2-4. Steve, you went 2-4. Bobby went 1-5. I didn't feel that bad. It was just a bad week for all of us. So let's just flush it and move on, guys. We got a great slate of college football week 7 here. I had to pick 3 games. I really wanted to pick 4 and just do 2 NFL games. But we're going 3-3 because it's some great games. I haven't told you all this. Bobby's got the picks, and he sent me his picks already. But you guys are kind of blind. But I think you can kind of imagine what we're going to go out with college football week 7 specifically. There's 3 awesome games, starting off with the Red River Shootout. Number 1, Texas opens as 14.5 point favorites versus number 18, Oklahoma in Dallas, guys. Bobby's got Texas covering the 14.5 points.
I'll take Oklahoma in that 14.
Yeah, I'm
14.5, whatever it is.
I'm with Mike on that points. One. Too many points for me. That's too steep for my blood to give away.
I thought it would be 10. Man, I saw 14.5.
Eesh, scares me.
I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of points. Texas is good now. Really good, but now we'll see how they handle the pressure of being the king. That crown get mighty heavy on your head.
And this one's in Oklahoma, too.
It's in Dallas.
Dallas.
Okay.
It's the Red River, so it's there every year.
I'm going with Texas here. I'm not impressed by Oklahoma. I saw what Tennessee did to them when they had that really big opportunity a couple weeks ago. I don't know even who's playing quarterback for OU at this point. UT, I just think, you know, they've been so impressive. They're clearly the number one team. And yes, the crown may get heavy, but this just screams to me like a potential blowout. I know the rivalry games are, you know, they always have their close matchups. But give me UT. I'm with Bobby on this one, so we got a split decision here. By the way, I actually didn't announce the standings so far this year. Mike, you and I are tied atop 14 and 16, so it's just hasn't been a good year for any of us. Steve, you're at 12 and 18, and Bobby's at 11 and 19. Up next, we have a top 3 matchup. Number 2, Ohio State opens as 3-point favorites at number 3, Oregon. Bobby's got Ohio State on the road, guys.
I'm going with Oregon.
Whew, this one's tough for me. I'm feeling, I don't know, I'm going to have to go with the quack attack. I'm going to give me Oregon as well in this matchup. All around, though, not really confident in either pick, honestly.
Me neither. And this one is easily the hardest of this week for me. I go back and forth on it. Danny Cannell had a great point about Oregon and how they're kind of finding their rhythm at the right time. Ohio State is one of the best teams in the country, undoubtedly so. And if you look at the college football playoff odds, I think they're leading the way by a decent margin. The issue here is that they really haven't been tested yet. They're going on the road. It's a really big matchup. I think it's a field goal type of game, so this might be a push, guys. But I'm going with Oregon here as well. So, Mike, you got Oregon. I got Oregon. Bobby's got Ohio State. Steve, who did you pick?
I got Oregon as well. Quack attack.
All right, there we go. And then we have our final game of college football week 7. Number 9, Ole Miss opens as 3.5 point favorites at number 13, LSU. And Bobby is making a pretty shocking decision here, going with Ole Miss in the 3.5.
It didn't surprise me. Him and I got into a discussion about it when we did TV on Tuesday. You know what? I'm going to go with LSU here.
Yeah, I'm going with LSU at home against Ole Miss. Getting points in this matchup, too, I can't, you know.
It ain't a lot of points, but it's enough.
But I'll take enough with LSU at home.
And it is 3.5, right, Charlie?
It's 3.5, guys. And I kind of agree with what Jordy was saying in our last segment that LSU's not a good matchup for Ole Miss. Like, or Ole Miss is not a good matchup for LSU, at least. But 3.5, you have a, you know, even that half point to work with if it's a field goal game, which this very well could be, you know, Saturday night in Death Valley. I may be kind of leaning on the wrong side here, but I'm thinking LSU plus 3.5, too, guys. So it's the three of us versus Bobby and both the Oregon and Ohio State and LSU Ole Miss matchup. So that's pretty fun. Moving on to week 6 of the NFL, we got the Buccaneers opening as 3.5 point favorites at the Saints.
That's the one thing with Bob. He's picking, trying to pick with his head with this because he never picks against LSU. Never.
Well, you'd be stunned that he picked against the Saints here too, guys. He's got the Bucs.
Yeah, well, that would
don't
surprise me.
So,
all right, so we're going into this matchup. You were saying the Saints are what you have, 3.5 point?
Buccaneers, 3.5 point favorites at the Saints.
Man, I'm going to go with the Saints at home getting the 3.5. I'm going to believe in the rookie Rattler making a nice debut of performance. I think the defense will keep the Saints in this matchup. And maybe if they don't win, they'll at least cover the game. Just taking the Saints in the Superdome in this matchup.
I'm going to go with Tampa. I'm going to agree with Bob on
this. I'm with you on this one, Mike. I just don't know. You know, it's funny, two rookie quarterbacks making their first NFL start this weekend, and it's Spencer Rattler and Drake May, and who are they going against? Oh, just Todd Bowles and D'Amico Ryans, two of the better defensive coaches in the NFL. So it's tough, man. The Bucs, 3.5. Like, I wish it was 2.5 or just 3 flat out. That half point really kind of stinks, but give me Tampa Bay here as well, guys. Moving on, we got the Commanders at the Ravens. Baltimore opens as 7-point favorites over Jaden Daniels in Washington at home in Baltimore.
7 points against the a lot of people are already talking about Jaden Daniels possibly being MVP at this point of the season right now. It's been pretty awesome for him, like what the Commanders are doing, but man, Ravens at home, even at that 6.5, what did you say, or 7, Charlie?
It's seven. It's a full 7 points. By the way,
points.
Bobby's got the Ravens. Just
yeah, I'm gonna roll with the quote the Raven nevermore on this matchup at home too. I just think too much Lamar and Derrick Henry against the Commanders, even though I love what Jaden's doing.
Man, I thought somebody would go with the Commanders, but I'm going Ravens.
Yeah,
man, I love Jaden, yeah. But man, I don't know if they can stop that attack.
This is not even just the rushing attack, but also the passing attack of the Ravens. The Commanders have their weaknesses, and they haven't necessarily been exposed just yet because Jaden's been playing that well. But give me Baltimore here too, guys. -7 at home. I think they win by at least a touchdown. And it's not like a panic moment for Washington at all. They're still playing great football. It's early in the season. But just the way that the Ravens are playing, especially since that kind of slow start that they had where they lost to not just the Chiefs but also the Raiders. They've been playing excellent football the last few weeks. Give me Baltimore -7 at home. And then wrapping things up, guys, we got the Lions who are 3-point favorites coming off a bye at the Dallas Cowboys. You know who Bobby took in this one. He's taking the Lions.
And I'll go with him. I'll go with the Lions.
You know, I'm going to buck the trend on this one and go against what I'm thinking, and hopefully that ends up being right. I'm going to take Dallas in this one.
What?
At home, a 3-point underdog. Give me the points with Dallas at home. I think they end up winning this game outright.
You know the Lions do run the ball now.
I do.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately, right.
Yeah, and that's been the Achilles heel of the Cowboys so far, guys. Give me the Lions. I mean, coming off a bye as well, like you get some kind of bones, like some bruises rested up a little bit for this matchup. The Cowboys, kind of similar to the Ravens, have kind of gotten bounced back after a slowish start. But at the same time, I'm feeling the Lions here, especially, you know, the Cowboys are coming off a week where they just probably got beat up by the Steelers. That was a very physical game on Sunday Night Football. Give me the more well-rested team. Give me Detroit here.
The one thing with the Lions, there is a formula on how to beat Dallas.
Right.
On the defensive side, and that is to run the ball. One thing I do with Dan Campbell, he ain't never going to get away from that.
That's
no matter what
right.
He's got at wide receiver, he's always going to want to run the football.
So that's it. That's our 6 games. It's going to be a fun week, guys.
Yeah, I think we only were the same on one game altogether for everybody.
Yeah, Mike and I had a lot of the same picks, but I'm going to be a big Texas fan on Saturday, so we'll see how that goes.
And then I'll hear about it if OU keeps his game close.
That was our Pick 6 segment here on WWL. We're at the Treasure Chest Casino. You want me to stop at the sportsbook, Charlie, and put any money on any of these games for
you? The way we're picking, absolutely not.
Charlie, better keep your money in your pocket.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of Sports Talk right here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Countdown to Thursday Night Football. We'll be right back right here on WWL after the break. Wrapping up this hour of Sports Talk, we'll be coming back next hour. We'll be talking to Eve Van Pelt, publisher of The Rebel Walk, getting some more inside info on those Ole Miss Rebels ahead of that matchup against LSU Saturday night, 6:30 Death Valley. We'll be right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. After that, 7 o'clock, Thursday Night Football, 49ers Seahawks. Coming back with more Sports Talk, though, right after the news break here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are getting ready for Thursday Night Football, Week 6 already in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers will be kicking that off 7 o'clock right here on WWL in the Odyssey app. Also here in the casino, plenty of TV screens for your Thursday night action. Me and Mike here every Thursday getting you ready for the big game coming on. And next week we won't be here, though, Mike, because it'll be Denver Broncos and the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, and they got a pretty good line already. People are putting up a few coins. They stopped me along the way, so I had to take a little pit stop. But they got a nice line here, so come on down and see us.
Betting advice from Mike before you go over to the window.
You know, my deal is I ain't been too hot lately, so I don't know. You might want to bet against that, but we had the game, bar, and grill. Come on by and see us. We're here every Thursday. We won't be here next Thursday because of Thursday Night Football, but we'll be here every Thursday after that. And great food, drink specials here. We got about 16 TVs, and if you want to put a few nickels on a game that you like, you can go ahead and do it. And one of the things I wanted to bring up to Jordy, and I'm really interested in this, as LSU play Ole Miss, and now with Parker down with an injury, and you're not going to see Chris Hilton. I'd be really shocked if Chris Hilton played in this game. Is that do they go to more multiple tight end sets with this and try to use that size advantage with Tre'Davious Green and with Kate Pimpton? Both guys over 6'6". I know one thing, they don't have a defensive back linebacker that tall. And Garrett just put it up there. Hey, go get it. Go get it, make a play on it, because if I'm going to rotate coverage to anybody, it's more likely going to be Kyron Lacy,
right?
Ole Miss will go after. And if I see that they're going to rotate it that much toward Kyron, Mason becomes a bigger play here. Mason Taylor at tight end. But, you got to get Kay Pimpton. And you got to get Tre'Davious Green more involved because of their size advantage, especially short area red zone plays.
Overall, right now, Mike, what have you been thinking about Garrett Nussmeier's performance in the early
going?
Outstanding. You think that he's kind of boosting his draft stock some with folks?
Listen, I told him this in the summer. Him and I were laughing about it because, his dad and I, we go back a few years with Doug. And, he played here with the Saints for a while. For a little while, and then he became a coach, and he has sort of bounced around. Is the nomad life of being an assistant coach in college or pro football. He reminds me a lot of Baker. Not personality-wise.
Sure.
The way he plays.
Okay.
He moves a little bit left, a little bit right. Every once in a while, he'll run with it. Now, he's not noted as being a runner, but he's a much better athlete than people give him credit for.
Just enough to make you a little dangerous.
And, man, he is pinpoint with his passes. Mm-hmm. He likes that short, intermediate stuff. They haven't had Chris Hilton there to really open up the deep ball. He hit that one big play to Kyle Parker for a deep pass for a score. But, man, I'm impressed with Garrett. He's so smart. He knows where to go with the football. Is he going to make mistakes? Yeah. Come on. Yeah, you're not – nobody's perfect in this world. Especially when you're playing sports, they want you to be perfect, but it's not that way. But, man, he knows where to go with the football. And I think he also knows his strengths and his limitations as a player. Now, he can't run like Jaden. But nobody can.
Right, yeah.
I mean, but, man, his ability to kind of eat you up, and I brought this up yesterday, he's almost like a surgeon. Like he surgically can cut you and then cut you and then cut you. Man, all of a sudden you got a big wound coming on. And their offense has played so much better with Caden Durham at running back. and what he brings to the table. His speed element, his quickness element, his ability to one cut, bang, he hits it up the field, and he's downfield real well. With Caleb, he got too big. He went from 205 pounds to 230 pounds. It's almost like, man, you got too big for the position. You got to scale that back a little bit. Josh is still a good player. He's a really solid player. But and you see the talent in Caden Durham. And I think Brian said, enough's enough. Hey, I don't care if you're a freshman or not. Hey, kid, get in there. You got it now.
It's really been frustrating. You mentioned Chris Hilton not being, you know, expecting him. What's the deal with that ankle issue? He just can't seem to get back on the field, unfortunately.
And from what I heard, it may be a little bit of a setback.
Okay.
With the rehab. So we'll see with Chris. Chris is talented. And
missing that speed factor, for sure.
And talking to Garrett at Manning Camp, he had told me, you know, he had brought up about Karin. He said, you know, the thing with Karin always talks about how he can play basketball. And Karin was a great basketball player. But he found out they got a lot of 6'2" basketball players. I saw him help Thibodaux High School win a state championship in basketball. But he really praised Chris Hilton. And how well he has developed as a player. And, man, it's just sometimes injuries, man, it just get the best of you. And you see it here with Chris Hilton.
You mentioned injuries. We're going to go over the injury report for the Saints real quick, Mike. Not practicing today for the black and gold. Taysom Hill, Cesar Ruiz, Derek Carr, Lucas Patrick, Will Harris, Pete Werner, and Rashid Shaheed. Limited for the Saints, Peyton Turner, Alvin Kamara, and also, I'm sorry, Rashid Shaheed was limited. He did not practice yesterday, yeah. And Willie Gay was a full go, as was Kendra Miller. And we kind of talked about that in the 4 o'clock hour. Hopefully, Kendra can get on the field and be a little bit of a relief for Alvin Kamara. Because, man, oh, man, he's just been getting worn down.
Okay, somewhere along the line, you got to make a decision here. If, you know, I don't know how much you trust Jamal Williams. But if you don't trust him, then you either got to elevate Jordan Mims,
right,
or you got to do something at running back. You can't keep running, you know, Alvin and having that many touches as a runner and a receiver. In a 17-game season, he's not going to last. This is why you spent a third-round pick on Kendra Miller. You want him to be a production player. So far, he's been, you know, potential and a watching player.
A flash here and there.
Yeah, that's all he's been.
Some of our, you know, you check in the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Some folks have been chiming in. What about a guy like Leonard Fournette that's still on the free agent market? Obviously, still out there for a reason.
I want to see if Leonard's in shape, okay? you know, because the last time I saw Leonard, it looked like he was carrying a few extra pounds on him. But
too many trips to Krispy Kreme.
I don't know about all that. I do know he looked heavier than what I've seen him in the past, and so – you know, with Leonard, man, great college, unbelievable high school player. One of the most dynamic high school players I've ever seen in, say, 40 years. And then terrific player at LSU, had his moments in the NFL. But never know when it comes to an end. You know, man, Leonard was, I say this a lot, you wonder about a little bit of thread off the tires, many touches as he's had as a runner. Is a reason why he's still unemployed? You know, it's not about money at this stage.
No, I think obviously everybody, you see that LSU connection, and people have hopes and dreams of reuniting a local kid back with, you know, a Saints program, maybe to close out the end of his career. But right now, obviously the Saints have a need there, but there's a reason, like you mentioned, Fournette is not with anybody. I know he spent a brief amount of time with the Buffalo Bills last year.
He was on that practice squad.
Yeah, and didn't end up doing anything.
And so, again, there's a reason he's not in the league right now.
Looking at this, we're going to take a break and be right back with more of Sports Talk. Going to get into the Ole Miss side of things with Eve Van Pelt, publisher of The Rebel Walk, when we get back, previewing the big matchup Saturday night in Death Valley, LSU-Ole Miss, the Magnolia Bowl, kicking off 6:30 on WWL and the Odyssey app. Coming right back with more after this on Sports Talk. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We have been breaking down the weekend's big matchups, obviously Saints and Buccaneers on Sunday, and then a big one in Death Valley with LSU hosting Ole Miss. To help us break that game down, Eve Van Pelt, publisher of The Rebel Walk, joins us now here on WWL. Eve, how you been doing?
Doing great. Really excited about this game this weekend.
Evelyn, glad to hear you're doing better. I know you had a little surgery and everything. That teach you a lesson. We're not getting younger, okay? The clock is spinning. And you can't push no Jeep, okay? You got to call AAA for that Jeep. You can't be pushing no Jeep around.
What was I thinking? I mean, that was just, I can promise you I won't do that again.
Well, I'm glad.
The crazy thing was my sister, who is 10 years younger than I am, hopped in the driver's seat and said, I'll steer, you push. And I did. So, yeah, never again.
To tell your sister, she's going to have to do the pushing next time on that.
Amen.
On offense, this is always a part of a peeve of mine, that when you lose a terrific player, Quinshon Judkins was that for Ole Miss. He was an outstanding running back. Now, I know that was the swirl of the tornado constantly around him once he made a name for himself. And maybe Ole Miss's best running back hasn't played because he's been suspended or, he's not active, so to speak. That part of Ole Miss's game, which I always thought Lane was underrated at, because people always talk about how he throws the ball around, but he really wants to run the ball too, and it's not quite as good as we've seen it the last 2 years. Is it just my imagination? But it doesn't look as effective as it's been the last 2 years, and a lot of that has to do with personnel.
Absolutely. And you're right, and the player you're referring to is, I'm sure, is Ulysses Bentley IV. Things are going to get interesting this weekend because Ole Miss, went and got Henry Parrish back to Ole Miss and rejoining running back coach Kevin Smith, who had gone to Miami, and then Parrish followed him, and then Smith came back, and now Parrish is back. But the RB2 has been Matt Jones, a former walk-on. And, Ulysses Bentley was relegated to RB3. And so a lot of folks have, had a lot of speculation about that. But Matt Jones, I think, I know he got injured against South Carolina. I would be surprised if he plays against LSU. So now it's going to get interesting. You've got Henry Parrish, and then what do you do after that?
Yeah, it's the list is real short to call the roll after that. Trey Harris, any news about potentially him not playing in this game? I know he left out pretty early last week against South Carolina. I've known Trey for a while, because Trey was a Louisiana guy. And he was sort of on the B list for LSU, goes to Louisiana Tech, and was a good player there. He became a very good player at Ole Miss.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I know Lane told us, and you got to take Lane's injury reports with a grain of salt, but he did tell us, because he doesn't like to talk about it, but Monday he told us if the game were Monday, Trey Harris would not be playing. So I tend to believe him on that. I don't know. I think it would be – you'd be hard-pressed to see Trey Harris not at least try and play Saturday against LSU. So if he is out or limited, no doubt Ole Miss's passing attack is not the same. If he's good to go, then I think, things will be a little bit different.
Eva, it has been money well spent, NIL money, on the improvements they've made on the defensive side of football, and in particular up front. We're bringing in Prince and also Noel.
Oh, man. I tell you what, I think that to see the Ole Miss defense, and I'd probably have to go back a long time to find it, but, for the Ole Miss defense to be stopping people the way they are, and that defensive front, you're right, Princely, Imani Allen. Now, I will say he did not play against South Carolina, and he may not play against LSU. But to see that, when is the last time you can recall the Ole Miss defense leading the league in rushing defense? They're only giving up 63 yards a game rushing. I don't know. You know, scoring defense, I think they're number three in the nation, maybe only giving up like an average of 7.5 points. So to me, it all starts up front. And I keep, you know, I sound like a broken record. When Ole Miss got just thumped by Georgia last year, and it was a thumping. They got beat. I mean, even Lane admitted, well, you had to admit it because it was obvious on both sides of the line. And he just said, we don't look like those people. We've got to get bigger. And I think in the portal, he went and did that.
You look at this LSU offense coming into this game against the Ole Miss defense. Obviously, the Tigers' offensive line has been highly touted all year long. How is that pass rush of the Rebels going to stack up against this O-line? Are they going to do some damage and maybe influence Nussmeier to get rid of the ball a lot sooner?
Well, you know, that's what's interesting to me. I mean, I feel like Nussmeier's getting rid of the ball fairly quickly. I saw something somewhere that said, you know, 2.5 seconds. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to get pressure on him. One thing I can tell you is Ole Miss has 5 defensive players with double-digit quarterback hurries. So that is going to be an integral. I mean, I know those LSU tackles. I think the Ole Miss defensive players are tired of hearing, you know, all week the media has been talking to them about, you know, how outstanding the LSU tackles are. And so, you know, that's definitely going to be a challenge. I think while it may hurt them a little bit not to have Princely, I got to tell you, Suntarian Perkins looked really good against South Carolina, and it ended up being defensive player of the week for this week. So, but no doubt they're going to have to find a way to get to Nussmeier, or at least pressure him somewhat. And that's going to be a tall task with that offensive line.
Eva, I think one of the things last year was a shootout that ended unbelievably because Jaden Daniels threw a dart at the final play. I mean, it hit Chris Hilton in a bad spot. Right in the hands. He couldn't come up with it, but it was – if you just didn't have –
It was there.
Right. Oh, it was more than there. if you didn't have a dog in the hunt, it was a great game to watch because of the ebb and the flow of the game. I don't know that we'll see that type of game. I think it'll be high scoring, but it can't be like that again. I think it may come down to special teams play. Give us a little rundown of the Ole Miss punting, kicking unit, and also the return games.
Well, I tell you, you know, to be honest, well, the Ole Miss punter, Frazier Messine, is very good. He hadn't had as much work, you know, as a lot of teams' punters because, you know, just Lane's system and his analytics and going for it. But speaking of that, Caden Davis, who is a transferred to Ole Miss last year, kicker from A&M, you know, bless his heart, he'd been hitting, you know, 60-yarders, you know, pregame, and then misses the 58-yarder against Kentucky that could have put that game into overtime. So I know he's just still sick over that. Really, really super kid. In the return game, I think, you know, Ole Miss has a lot of weapons back there. They used to, you know, they used to use Jordan Watkins, and that always made me nervous. They're one of their, he's their slot receiver. And I'm like, we don't need anything happening to Jordan. But they've been using Micah Davis, and he's done a good job. I mean, to me, hang on to the ball. You know, I mean, that's the main thing is hang on to the ball, and he's done a good job with that. So I think, you know, Ole Miss is pretty strong in the special teams game.
One of the things to watch is Xavier Thomas, who has been a terrific return man. You got to see him play a lot. He was at Mississippi State before he transferred to LSU. And he has come close to breaking a couple. And so they're going to have to be careful in their return unit play because Van Thomas has really, really played well for LSU in the return game. He's given them something they haven't had in years as a real dynamic return man on punts.
Absolutely. And I was doing a little bit of research on him in my kind of scouting of LSU. And I didn't realize he ran the anchor leg on Louisiana's 5A, sixth place, 4x100 relay team as a junior back in 2021. So, yeah, he is dynamic. And, yeah, I sure hope Ole Miss is able to account for him in some form or fashion, because you're right. I mean, Ole Miss really hasn't had, had really good coverage so far this season, and there hadn't really been anything where anybody's just broken loose for huge, huge gains on him. And, but I tell you what, if anybody were to, Xavien Thomas would definitely be my candidate.
Eve, is there anybody on this Ole Miss squad that we haven't really been talking about or may not be as familiar with that we should be worried about going into this matchup?
Well, I tell you what, I go back to, if Ulysses Bentley plays, then I think definitely he is a game changer. I think he's done well. He's played against LSU before. He's got a lot of experience. So if he plays, definitely him. I think that offensive line for Ole Miss is going to be key. They've got their left tackle, Jaden Williams, who was a freshman All-American a couple of years ago, and he is out injured. I do not expect to see him. And so Diego Pounds, a transfer from North Carolina, is playing left tackle. I think that's going to be really important for Ole Miss. They've got to be able to give Dart some time. So I think that he's one to look at. And then, you know, basically the entire secondary, we'll see how they do. I mean, Alabama transfer Trey Amos back in the secondary needs to have a big game.
He's another guy from Louisiana.
Trey. Yes, that's right. I just now realized that. That's right. As soon as I said that, definitely he is. So, man, a lot of talent coming out of the boot there. Yeah, I think he was from New Iberia, I think, if I'm correct.
One of the things with Jackson, and, you know, he's passed for over 70% passing percentage, but I saw the last couple games, and I'll get your thoughts on this. He's given up some easy throws underneath to try to hit the big play. Now, part of that is Lane, mm-hmm. the way he wants his offense run, and also the running element of Dart, because, you know, you can have everything covered, and then all of a sudden he takes off running. He ain't no little bitty guy. I mean, he's a big man breaking downfield, and we saw it a year ago. Him make some key plays on third downs with his legs to get first down opportunities. So a little bit about his running skills, but I think the last couple games, he's maybe gotten a little bit greedy, especially in the Kentucky game, and I don't know if it was frustration, but he passed up 8-9 yard kind of easy completions to go for the deep ball. We saw it late in the game, him try that. Mm-hmm. So your thoughts on, he was so good early in the year, and everything worked. And in the last couple of weeks, maybe not quite as well when you're going up against SEC defenses.
Right, absolutely. And to your point, I mean, if you look at passes of 20-plus yards down the field against South Carolina and Kentucky, he was only 3 for 17. So that kind of begs your question, you know, why are we passing up some of those mid-level passes and going for broke? And against Kentucky, Kentucky played three high safeties, and Ole Miss looked confused when Kentucky took away the deeper third of the field, I'll be honest. So, you know, part of it is that, you know, and you're right. I think a lot of that is Lane and his, you know, his system and what he wants to do. But also, thus far in 2024, Trey Harris has 64 targets. Now, you know, granted, he's got an 81% completion rate when targeted, so okay. But the next most target is Juice Wells, and he just has 30. So, you know, that's a big disparity there. And I think, you know, Ole Miss has been a little over-reliant on those explosive 20-plus yard plays. So, and to be honest, when Ole Miss has had the most success, it has been when Jackson has played more of a role in the ground game. So really good points. You're right.
Eve, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for all the inside info we got on Ole Miss. You can check out all of her work at she's the publisher of TheRebelWalk.com. If you're interested in this matchup, obviously against LSU or anything Ole Miss, check out her stuff there. Again, Eve, thank you so much.
Eve, don't be pushing no
so
Jeeps
much.
No more, and I'm glad you better, gal. I'm glad you better.
I'm done. Thank you so much. I sure
call
appreciate it.
Call Mike, he'll get you
it.
Out.
Yeah, listen, give me a call next time. I'll get you going. I'll get you moving.
Okay, I sure appreciate it. Yeah. Take care.
All right. Awesome stuff. Eve Van Pelt, publisher of TheRebelWalk.com. We're going to take a break and be back with more sports talk. We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino getting ready for Thursday Night Football. Week 6 action getting underway tonight, folks. Be back right after this on WWL after the break. We were just talking about that big game Saturday night in Death Valley, Tiger fans. 4-1 LSU taking on 5-1 Ole Miss Saturday night. Death Valley coverage starts 2 o'clock right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. You can join Mike Dettillier and Herb Tyler for the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. They're going to be live from the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge, presented by MAP Construction. Always a great time with Mike and Herb. They got 16 surround sound TVs, drink specials, plus life's more fun with seafood, folks. Catch LSU's pregame at 4:30 with Chris Blair, Jacob Hester at 6:30, Tigers versus Rebels. 10 hours of exciting LSU football coverage. That's Saturday starting 2 p.m. on WWL and the free Odyssey app. And at least you got a night kickoff this week, Mike. Those early one starts got to be rough for those early mornings. I mean, when you're doing stuff 8, 9 a.m., it's like, oof.
Yeah, we do this 8 to 10 or 7 to 9. And then
and you're not a coffee guy, right?
No, oh, no. I got to drink something cool. it can't be coffee. And even cold coffee, I don't care for that. And then, bang, 11 o'clock kickoff. Man, I don't like them 11 o'clock kickoffs, but whatever. And then we roll it afterwards. We do the pregame and then the postgame. But me and Herb and Luke, we take care of business, so to speak. And we Acme Oyster House is really like a little more than a mile from Tiger Stadium.
Stone's throw away.
Man. You know, if my leg was better than my knee, I could walk it. I used to walk it more than that, but not no more. I need me the four wheels.
Yeah, you need like a special golf cart to take you to the stadium.
Well, I can get me somebody to bring me. It's to bring me back is the real issue. Anybody who's fought that traffic, ooh, Lord, after the game is quite a conundrum.
And obviously this year, 100 years of Tiger Stadium, pretty impressive. And we were kind of talking about a little off the air, Mike, just this is a golden age, you called it, of just LSU athletics represented in many different sports and different levels.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this. You look at the athletics and Mondo, you know.
There you go, too, right? Another
you
one.
Know, and Vernon who from Morgan City, who I think he finished with a couple of medals in the Olympics. And LSU's track program is unbelievable, both women's and men's. You think about LSU women's basketball with Kim Mulkey and Angel Reese, that group has done. And then now she's building another team which could really be competitive. Jay Johnson, we've seen Paul Skeens, you know, and Dylan Cruz. And he's got another really, really talented team coming back this year. Can you put on an NFL game and is Joe Burrow, is Jaden Daniels, is Malik Nabers, you know, is Brian Thomas Jr., Jefferson, Chase. You can go on and on and on with the guys. It is really something to watch. Golf has also been a big part of the LSU athletics. My thing is LSU basketball better catch up.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Coach McMahon, he got to catch that up.
Well, they're working on it. Hopefully we get a better season from the Bayou Bengals on the basketball court this year. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be closing things out here at the Treasure Chest Casino, getting ready for Thursday Night Football, Seattle versus San Fran, right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Taking a break. Be right back. Back here at our Thursday spot, the Treasure Chest Casino. Guys, looking at an update on the Twitter sphere, seeing 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey targeting to return in early November. That's per Ian Rappaport of the NFLnetwork.com.
Man, he got Achilles injuries on both sides,
right,
left and right.
I know he went to Germany recently, and obviously things didn't go so well there either.
No, I think they told him the bad news
right
with the Achilles. Charlie, you'd like this. The Atlanta Braves are really making some big changes on their coaching staff. Their hitting coach, they released Kevin Seitzer. Their assistant hitting coach, Bobby Mangalings, and catching coach Sal Fasano. they all got released today by the Atlanta Braves. That goes to show you, even if you win, you don't win enough, you get unemployed.
I don't think I've ever seen a team that made the playoffs that had as much like complaining and whining as Braves fans this year. They hated watching that team. And, I mean, yes, they had injuries up and down the lineup. Like, Ronald Acuna missed basically the whole year. Same thing with Spencer Strider, two superstars. But at the same time, they made it to the postseason. Like, that's still an accomplishment. Obviously, the Braves are moving on from both of those guys. And, obviously, I think the fans are pretty happy about it, too.
Yeah, three assistant coaching changes and the hitting coaches. And so that goes to show you you wonder a little bit, too, when things like that happen, if that don't come from the boss.
Right.
You know, the head man signs them mules every week, so to speak.
Looking at some of the action going on right now, gentlemen, we have the Guardians and Tigers tied up 2-2 apiece. That's the bottom of the sixth inning there. Detroit's leading that series 2-1. Then a 7:08 first pitch will be the New York Yankees and Kansas City Royals in that game. So plenty of MLB action and Thursday Night Football coming on this evening. I'll be tuned into both.
Man, Hoss must be happy. Because I saw James Madison, they had a 7-0 lead, but then bang, here come Coastal, and they just scored, and it looks like it's going to be 7-7. So he's going to be a little bit happy about that.
Had another great time here at the Treasure Chest.
Man, come on down and see us every Thursday.